Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Another one bites the dust. Matt Lauer was fired today. We all know why. There were allegations of sexual harassment in the workplace. Now, I don't know the specifics of the allegations. NBC News reports that they were detailed, that they checked them out, that they have reason to believe that there may be others that have accused Matt Lauer of things. But, of course, Matt Lauer joins a long line of people who are accused of sexual harassment. Many of them have been fired. Of course, the ones who are in journalism or in Hollywood have been immediately fired. Matt Lauer, Charlie Rose, Harvey Weinstein, Kevin Spacey, CK, the comic. They're all just gone. Louis C.K., thank you. Louis C.K. They're all just fired. They're gone. Whereas the conservatives, the people in politics, the people who have been accused of far, far worse than even these folks, people like, an accused child molester by the name of Roy Moore, or maybe a certain guy who bragged about grabbing women by the, I guess I'll say it, by the pussy, bragged about it and had dozens of women accuse him of touching them inappropriately. That guy, what's he doing now? He's playing golf, I think. He's also, unfortunately, president of the United States. These people seem to have no consequences for their actions. And I want to talk today in general about sexual harassment, because I think sometimes we conflate very, very serious offenses with far less serious offenses. Things that are still wrong and bad to do, but I think there's clearly a range here. Everything from an unwanted kiss to, well, child sexual assault. And a gradations in between. And I guess I'm making a plea this hour for two things. One, that we judge the severity of the offense by the severity of the offense and recognize that there are gradations here and that we can't lump all these people together. Some have committed sexual assault. Some have gone after children. And others, we'll talk about the line here because I'm not defending, and I'm not defending any of the conduct, but we all know the difference between double parking, which I hate. I hate cars that double park. Don't double park around me. And someone who, commits sexual assault. There's all kinds of ranges of crimes. There's all kinds of ranges of sexual harassment. So I want to talk about that and also talk about evidence, because I think it is important that cases be proven. I don't mean proven like court of law beyond a reasonable doubt proven. That's the criminal standard. But there should be evidence for crimes. And in fact, the best example of why we shouldn't believe everyone, I know there are people that say, believe all women. Well, there was a woman who approached the Washington Post saying that Roy Moore had forced her to have an abortion. And she was fake. She was entirely fake news. She was put there by James O'Keefe. He's got a outfit named Project Veritas, which might as well just be called Pravda. Veritas is Latin for truth. Pravda is Russian for truth. And there's as much truth in Project Veritas as there is in Pravda as there is in, well, any of George Orwell's Big Brother sayings. These are designed purposely. And indeed, O'Keefe never denied that he's working with Roy Moore purposely to try to trick The Washington Post into believing something that he knew to be a lie in order to discount the dozen women or so who Roy Moore mistreated when they were children. You know, pedophile, and there's a dozen women who've come forward, but you put forward one liar, and you prove that one's a liar, and suddenly it's designed to actually harm the allegations, which I think are very much proven, but for which there's substantial evidence, of the dozen women that have come forward. So the Washington Post did a great job there, and I'll talk about that too this hour. If you don't know and you haven't seen the video where the Washington Post uncovers the shill for this right-wing organization that's trying to really attack all journalism, but luckily the Washington Post has good enough journalism to catch the people who are lying to them. But what it tells you also is we've got to check that allegations are serious. We need to take them seriously. But of course, we need to check. I was on this I did a show a couple weeks ago on this subject, and a caller mentioned Tawana Brawley. Well, Tawana Brawley's claims were proven to be false. So I don't agree with believe all women. I do, however, agree with take all of these claims seriously, check them out, fact check them, and if they're proven to be true, well, people should suffer the consequences. But they're not all the same. And I've been thinking about the gradations of sexual harassment. If you heard my show a couple weeks ago, I talked about the very, very most serious claims first, mostly because those of you who know me know that my sister was murdered by her husband in an awful spate of domestic violence. That, you know, that's the worst of the worst. And so, and I talked about why we need to believe people who talk particularly about domestic violence. We need to hear their claims. We need to give them help. We need to make sure that there are facilities for them to go to, both in hospitals and in houses, safe places for them to be. And why I fought really hard in the Virginia legislature to both protect victims of sexual assault, protect the evidence so it's not discarded, to make sure that the rape kits are tested, to make sure they're not thrown away, and also we talked last time about the work I've done bringing to Northern Virginia a 24/7 center for victims of sexual assault. Clearly, murder is the worst of it, and a close second is sexual assault, non-consensual rape, or which in rape is more severe than non-consensual touching, although non-consensual touching is a terrible thing. And when it happens to children, it's a particularly terrible thing. That's why Roy Moore forcing a woman's head down on his crotch, I shouldn't say a woman, excuse me, a little girl's head down on his crotch, she was 14 at the time, after saying he would drive her home, someone he met while serving as a district attorney and seeing her mom in a courthouse fighting for custody and engendering the trust, as public officials often do, is a really serious and gross offense. I think you take that and then you go down to workplace sexual harassment, which is still very severe, and I think people should be fired for it, although I think it depends, I guess, on the nature of the sexual harassment. When you are an employer, you hold power over people, and it's power that should not be misused. It's okay to tell an employee, you know, I want it done this way, write me up this, the deadline's tomorrow, get it done, you know, no misspellings. Can be tough, but that's all fair. It is certainly unfair to use your power as an employer to get some kind of sexual favors. And we've heard a lot of gross descriptions, whether it's Harvey Weinstein masturbating or Charlie Rose opening his robe or Bill O'Reilly or Bill Cosby drugging people. There's some very, very severe allegations. And, you know, I understand why employees are afraid to speak up. They realize their whole careers are based on this powerful man, whether it be Bill O'Reilly or Bill Cosby. And so they are afraid that they're going to be harmed in the industry that they want. So they often didn't say anything. And that includes even someone as powerful as Megyn Kelly. She didn't say anything for a while. And I don't blame them. I understand that. So certainly sexual harassment in the workplace is a bad thing. It's not as bad as sexual assault or, you know, particularly of children. Certainly not as bad as murder or violence. But it's still a very, very bad thing, and people deserve to be fired for it. Now, Let's talk about other gradations. Things that are also serious, but maybe not as serious. A guy, and including an employer, that repeatedly asks a woman on a date. Now, that's still really bad. It's an improper thing to do. A boss has to be very, very careful when asking a subordinate out on a date. And bosses might well get the wrong impression. A subordinate, you know, an employee doesn't want to tell her boss, hey, you know, I don't want to date you. But certainly if told no once, the guy should never, ever ask again. It should be up to the then employee. Now, there are relationships to start between employer and employee. They're fraught. It's very dangerous. But it seems to me the employee has to take the initiative. But a boss that asks once and never asks again, should that boss be fired? I don't know that I'd go that far. And then there are questions outside the workplace, right? There's the couple out on a date, and she doesn't think the date's going well, and he kind of thinks the date's going well, and he leans in and gives a kiss that is unwanted and refused. Not cool. You know, you should be able to tell, but not a criminal offense, not a firing offense, just a way that people need to learn to be better. You know, then there's the Al Franken allegations. Let's talk about those, which I think are more minor than most, though also bad. We know that he played a sick sophomoric joke by having a picture of himself with his hands. I'm not so sure he touched her, but over a sleeping woman's breast. That's gross. It's gross. It's sophomoric. It's certainly something I've seen fraternity people do. It's not funny, and people like that should have a harsh talking to so they don't do it again. I don't think, though, it should be mentioned in the same sentence or paragraph as Roy Moore. We need to discern the two. You know, he gave an unwanted kiss as part of a comedy sketch, and that's bad. Although I've seen Saturday Night Live, which Al Franken used to work on, and I've seen actors and actresses French kiss on TV, usually for some gross reason, like, I don't know, sharing gum or something else that's supposed to be funny. Frankly, I don't find those things very funny, but I guess some people do. And actors are made to kiss each other when the script calls for it. So, given that Al Franken controlled the script, he certainly shouldn't have done it. It was gross. But let's, again, not speak of him in the same way as Roy Moore. I think it's very important that we make these gradations, because if we throw everyone in and we start saying Roy Moore, Bill Cosby, Bill O'Reilly, Harvey Weinstein, and Al Franken, we lose the severity of the really, really serious crimes. That is not to say that any of these things are justified, but forcing a 14-year-old to do something sexual is and should be a felony. That's a bad thing. That's a severe thing. That's not a comedian who took a kiss he shouldn't have taken. Bad too, not the same. So my plea this hour is note the distinction between the crimes, note the severity, make sure that it's true. We don't have a Project Veritas situation, and see how many there are. If there's one accuser, this isn't a guy with a serial problem. If there's 8 or 10 or 14, as is with the President of the United States, then you've got a serial misogynist and a dangerous sexual harasser. Please join in, agree or disagree, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I'll be right back.
Never confuse Mark Levine with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. There's a wonderful discussion going on my Facebook Live about this, and I welcome everyone's views. What one woman writes in and asks, you know, why someone would wait 20 or 30 years to share these stories. And I actually understand that. And it all has to do with the power, particularly in the workplace, where a powerful man has power over his employees. You know, you go back 25 years and listen to Anita Hill. Now, Anita Hill was incredibly persuasive. Even more persuasive than Anita Hill was the 7 or 8 other women that accused Clarence Thomas of sexual harassment that were not allowed to testify by the all-male Judiciary Committee back in 1992. But I remember those, I remember the hearings. I watched it very closely. In fact, I went to Yale Law School where both Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas went, and I had professors that knew both of them. And all of them, 2-1, knew that Anita Hill was telling the truth and Clarence Thomas was lying. And I'm going to have to get to your question, Deborah, about the 20 or 30 years after the breaks. But let me finish telling you about Hill and Thomas. One of the ways, and I do think we have to evaluate whether people are telling the truth. We cannot just believe everybody. But one of the ways that people can tell who's telling the truth and who's not is Anita Hill gave very specific, even weird descriptions, right? He talked about a pubic hair on his Coke, on a Coke can. That's not something that someone I don't think would have made up. Very specific allegations of when he saw her, what he did to her, how he asked her out, what porn movies he talked about. And as you recall, Clarence Thomas gave a blanket denial. He said it's a high-tech lynching. He tried to bring racial animus into this, which is, of course, ridiculous, given that both Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas are African-American. It's not about race at all. And he just blanketly denied it without saying, I knew her or I did this and she took this wrong. In fact, the people who have apologized for their behavior, I think when they say, this is what happened and this is what I thought and I'm sorry I got this wrong, you know, I give them some credit. The blanket denials, those are the people that aren't to be trusted. Of course, the two prime exhibits in that are Roy Moore and Donald Trump. But why do women wait 20, 30 years? Great question, Deborah. I'll get to it right after the break. 888-488-MARK, right back after this. Inside Scoop, I'm your host, Mark Levine, trying to talk about the nuances of sexual harassment. All too often, I think it ends up as a category of, you know, believe all women, or, you know, these things are nothing. They're no big deal. These things happen all the time. And as if there weren't a middle ground, as if there weren't gradations. And I think we as liberals need to recognize there are severities of sexual harassment. It depends on whether it's the workplace or out of the workplace. It depends on the power arrangement. It depends on what is done. Is it sexual assault? Is it touching? Is it a child? Or is it a clumsy attempt to ask someone out? Not good, but not at all the severity of these other things. Deborah on Facebook asked a really good question. Why do people wait 20 or 30 years to say something? And I'll tell you where I come at it. I've done a lot of work to help victims of child abuse. In fact, those of you who know my work with abused teens, particularly those who are put in institutions, it's some of the stuff that I've worked to do in Virginia and nationwide. And some of them were placed in awful places where they were raped, where they were sexually assaulted, where they were mentally and physically abused in horrific circumstances. And because they were in this extremely powerless situation where they couldn't even leave, it was like a prison. It's a gross thing. And if you ever want to hear about it, just go to Troubled Teen Industry on my website, marklevinetalk.com. I've done several shows on them. I'll probably do another show again. But these are people in the most awful situation. And they had no power to speak out. And when they finally escaped this place, they mostly wanted to not think about it. They wanted to go on with their lives. I could take an even more horrific example of a Holocaust survivor. And I know that most survivors, and I know many Holocaust survivors, did not want to talk about what happened to them a month after it happened, a year after it happened, 5 years after it happened. It often took 10 or 20 years for them to have the self-assuredness, the self-esteem, the belief in self. When you are completely abused, you have such a low self-opinion. You barely think of yourself as human sometimes. It depends on the person, of course. But it takes time to be strong enough to confront your accuser. It's one of the reasons why a law that I wrote that got passed in Virginia last year says that you can't throw away a rape kit until someone is 27 years old. The old law let them throw it away when a young woman was 20. And I thought 20 was too young. I thought, you know, what if it's your stepfather? What if he's still paying for your education? By 27, I hope that someone will be old enough to be able to make these decisions for themselves. So I hope that gives you some understanding, Deborah, of why someone waits 20 or 30 years. They think they're not going to be believed. Remember the woman who was 14 and Roy Moore took her, said he was driving her home and then took her into like the forest and made her touch him. And when she tried to get out of the car, she said, take me home. And she suggested she might tell someone. He said, no one will believe you. You're just a child. I'm the district attorney. And you know what? That's probably true. It's probably true that no one would have believed her 40 years ago. But we believe her today. We believe her strongly. So I hope that answers your question, Deborah. Now, to the many women who've called in my show, thank you for calling. I'm just going to take you in order. We'll start with Susan, line 5 in San Francisco. Hi, Susan. How are you?
Hi, Mark. This is Susan. And I want to talk about nuance on a personal level, my own history.
Okay.
But I also want to talk quickly about in Al Franken's situation, if I could.
Okay.
It drives me nuts. The media keeps saying that Al Franken's situation is different than Roy Moore without talking about the facts. First of all, Al Franken is a comedian. He was on a USO tour. I'm sure he put together a silly little sexy skit with this beautiful girl that the military man would get a kick out of because they've been away from regular life for a long time. And he probably put in the skit a silly, smushy, crazy kiss, which probably, and as the story goes, he didn't do it until she said okay, even if she said it reluctantly. And I understand that concept. So it was probably one or two seconds of a kiss within the skit that she agreed to. Okay? Now, she may have felt pressured, but I think you need to put it in context. That was.
Well, I agree. It's a far lesser offense. I still think it's wrong, and I think he's apologized. But it's certainly a far lesser offense, and I think I've made that clear that I agree with you.
And the other thing is the picture. It looks like he had his hand positioned in the general area.
Right.
But I don't see it a touch. She's wearing like a flak jacket practically.
Right.
He didn't wake her up.
Right.
It was another silly comedic picture.
Right.
Maybe it's bad taste.
It is bad taste. But I agree with you. It's nothing like Roy Moore. Nothing.
No.
I completely agree with you. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
It's bad taste. And
yeah.
He should be accused of. And he should. It was gross. But that's what it was. You know, it reminds me, there was a case, I don't know if you remember, a couple of years ago, maybe 5 years ago, there was a 28-year-old Obama speechwriter. And he was in that heavy, people forget how contentious it was between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary of 2008. And he had a cardboard cutout of Hillary Clinton, and he was drunk at a party, and he cupped the cardboard breasts of the Hillary Clinton and posted it on Facebook, okay? Not something that's good, all right? That's a bad thing to do. He apologized for it. He wasn't fired, but he was definitely raked through the coals, as he should be. It's a bad thing to do. And yet, you know, harassing a cardboard cutout is gross, but it's not. It doesn't rise to the level of some very, very serious crimes that we're talking about with regard to some
of
these
other
people. Right.
Not at all. But what I want to talk about is nuance.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you have to go as radical in terms of proving harassment or bad conduct as you go. And I think as someone who dealt with it chronically in my career as an attorney, okay, mm-hmm. Now, I became attorney in 1977. I had never seen a woman attorney on TV or in person. They weren't around. None of the partners were women. So it's a very male.
You and Ruth Bader Ginsburg were the pioneers.
Well, no, I'm not on her level.
I understand, but you know, or Sandra Day O'Connor, who I think was offered the job of a clerk because they wouldn't let her be a lawyer. But I get it.
Secretary.
Very, very, secretary. Right. Very, very different time 40 years ago.
Okay, so I enter law school, and one of the things you want to do is work for one of the professors that looks on your resume. So I worked with the contracts professor, and then I found out he was known for sexually harassing the young girls. I was 21 at the time, and I was scared to death. He would even go to the parties, law school parties, and harass. So I spent my
What would he do specifically? Do you remember?
No, because I never got it personally. I always stayed on the other side of the opposite side of the room from him at all time while doing my work. And he'd offer me sherry and sort of try to entice me. But I was very careful, okay?
But yeah, but you shouldn't have to be that careful. You shouldn't have to be on the other side of the room. But keep going.
Routinely, I did. Routinely. My first law clerk job, one of the two partners would come up and tell dirty jokes in my ears and start rubbing my shoulders so his fingers would slide down the upper part of my breast. And the other two law clerks, men, of course, because I was the only woman there who wasn't a law legal secretary, and there were no laws to protect me. And I said to the guys, what do I do about this? I mean,
can you just say, please don't do that?
Accelerating. And they said, Susan, there's nothing you can do about it. And there wasn't anything legally. So I landed up just quitting the job because I could not let it accelerate. Okay.
Did you ever, I'm just curious, and I'm not judging in any way, shape, or form, but did you ever say to him, please don't do that. I don't like my shoulders rubbed. You could make up a lie. I got a sensitive neck.
No, I did not feel comfortable about back then, and I knew it very clearly. If I did anything in response other than silence and evading, I might lose my job.
Yeah.
I might be blackballed. Small community. And back then, I felt very lucky just to have a job.
A job,
because
sure.
I'm sure they preferred male attorneys. Mm. I was very unique, okay?
No, it's all about powerlessness. That's exactly right.
And no one raped me. No one, but I quit a job. The second job interview, he said, you've got the job. And I felt very happy about that. He says, but what am I going to tell my wife about your legs? I said, geez, I'm walking into it again. Luckily, we kept it professional. And then next job after that, the guy, a solo practitioner, would walk behind me because back then women wore suits as attorneys. Mm-hmm. And I would catch him. I'd turn around. He'd be staring at my butt. I thought, this is crazy. I mean, there's no end to it. And I gave up the profession for 6 months. I said, I can't do this. I mean, I'm spending my life avoiding these guys. So it never got bad. But you can't work like that.
No, you can't. And it's not fair to ask you to – I mean, the men have to worry about the law and the brief and the deadlines and the court, and you have to worry about all of that.
Well, so did I.
And, exactly. You have to worry about all of that and not to get too close to the leering partner. That's an extra burden that you shouldn't have to undertake. That's exactly right.
And lastly, one of the big – I got a nice job, but it wasn't the department I wanted. And as soon as I was an attractive young woman back then with long blonde hair and blue eyes and a nice shape. And I always wore the most extreme boring suits and high neck blouses on purpose. Often wearing my hair in a bun and took off my contacts and wore glasses for a reason. So I start this job, and two of the male married partners who were known for harassing females were Johnny on the spot, almost one after the other, saying, hey, if you'd like to work with me in the business department, hey, if you'd like to work with me in the malpractice, which I would have loved to. But I knew their reputations. And if I took that, it would have been a leg up in my career. But I knew what was going to happen, so I never pursued it. But see, that's the new one.
No, I hear you. Thank you, Susan, for sharing your story. I think you hit
You're welcome. Nail
exactly on the head. I really do appreciate it. It just goes to show you, women, you need to work for more gay men. I'm just saying, you know. I never harassed any of my female interns, nor my male ones, I don't think. I don't think I did either. You can ask them. I think I've been very careful.
My favorite legal secretary was this built man, and we would check out the same men who walked
through
the door.
Yeah, see, it's very safe that way. Very, very safe that way. Thanks for your call, Susan. I appreciate it. Let me go to Charity, who's in D.C. on line one. Hey, Charity, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks for having me.
What do you want to share?
know, it's interesting. I'm from a family of all brothers. I'm the oldest, and you know, throughout my years living out in the bush in Alaska, being born in Hawaii, but being born to two intellectual East Coasters from Philadelphia and New York, I have experienced a lot of different ways people in this country can behave,
mm-hmm.
including men, men in different, you know, different geographies.
Yeah, different states, backgrounds. Right.
Men in elementary school, high school, college. You know, I was a high school and college debater. But, you know, the thing that women get demonized for by women, by parents, by professors, by bosses, by children, by everybody, is for not doing something perfectly enough when they finally do say something, or if they don't say something when it's convenient, because they may, like, I have been in situations where I would lose a scholarship, I would lose a job,
right.
You know, all kinds of
right.
things.
Right.
You know, you cannot win, and it's disheartening for me to see people so, especially men. I would say women, I'm going to look at that with a different lens, but to see men so comfortable passing judgment and making comments about, well, why didn't you say something sooner? Well, you know, well, the actresses are bad for not saying anything, but the secretaries, well, you know, I understand that. Anyone saying that, it's not easy. It's not easy.
It's not at all easy. I come up with this, by the way, with sexual assault, victims of sexual assault.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of work for them, and I attend like rallies against rape where I hear these really horrific stories, and people fear not being believed. They fear, and in some cases where a woman speaks out, she's the one that's harassed. You know, why were you wearing that outfit? Why were you drinking? Why are you out at 2 a.m. as if a woman doesn't have a right to wear a good looking outfit and have a drink and be out, because men have those privileges. Well, why, you know, and suddenly people are questioning the victim. I think we have a right to determine whether someone's telling the truth, but I don't think we have a right to question their choices. And I want to make that very clear distinction. You have a right to make sure someone is not, you know, like, you know, James O'Keefe spy. But at the same time, you don't have a right to say, why are you wearing that? Why are you out at 2 a.m.? Because I, as a man, can walk out at 2 a.m. all the time, and no one asks me why I was out at 2 a.m. So it's unfair for anyone to judge a woman by, you know, where, I mean, you might want to say to your friend, it may not be safe for you to be out there, but the last thing a victim needs to hear is accusations going their way.
I think that, you know, I think that if you add to being a woman, being a gay woman, hey, listen, you know, I dated someone who was assaulted in D.C., drop kicked and curbed by a guy, you know, on the metro. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she had short hair and button down shirt and, you know, khakis.
Right.
I mean, it's, you really can't. I mean, so
there's no justification for violence, period. Just period. None.
There's not. And I just think that what we should look forward to is this toxic culture we have towards women finally changing. And if enough people feel finally comfortable and able to speak up, because they're not going to lose their job, because you can't fire all the women in this country all at once, right?
Well, I don't know a woman who doesn't have a story. I don't either. Let me ask you this, Charity. Do you think that this moment we have, and we're clearly having a moment in time, you know, it's not one, it's more than 10. I mean, it's just every day. Matt Lauer, boom, today. I don't even know the details of that one. Do you think this moment will actually change everything, or do you think it's going to be a flash in the pan and two years? I'm not saying it's going to end sexual harassment. I'm not, you know, that naive. But do you think that this will make a difference in encouraging women to speak out and maybe even encouraging some men not to do this anymore?
I think that that is yet to be determined, and my hope is, you know, I have to have this hope. My hope is that, you know, things will change. You know, I have left jobs, I have sued companies, I have changed universities, I was raised to speak out, but for every time I've done that, I have seen 20, you know, people who are terrified if they do that, that they're not going to be able to take care of, fill in the blank, you know, themselves, their families, whatever.
Yeah, and we have custody laws.
I think that
sometimes
women speaking up is a big part of it, but I think, you know, there has to be some, I don't even know what the action looks like to make that safe, you know, for it to be okay. You spoke up, but how does that change? You know, I don't know what that looks like.
Charity, I have to take a break. You're welcome to stay on longer if you want, or if you're done, drop off. I do have another woman I want to hear from, but you're welcome to stay. I do have to take a break, though. 888-488-MARK if you want to join in. 888-488-6275. Preference for all women callers. We only got a few minutes left, so call now. This is the last break.
And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Two more callers I want to get to. Kat has been holding on a long time on line two from Akron, Ohio. Welcome to the show.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air. Thank you for calling, Kat.
Thank you for taking my call, Mark, and I really appreciate that. Sorry about that, my long distance, you know. You're getting a lot of really heartfelt calls, and I feel for all of these people who have said that they've been afraid to say anything because they would lose their job or anything else. And as a woman who's 58, this has also happened to me. I just wanted to say that in my 20s, I didn't know that sexual harassment was sexual harassment, and I think a lot of people didn't. I'm not even sure the men did. You know, the definition has changed throughout the years, but the actions have been the same. And a person who maybe in the 60s or 70s behaved a certain way, all of a sudden is shocked that they can't behave that way anymore. Well, it was wrong in the first place, of course, as we know. And myself...
While I do agree with you with regard to things like what Al Franken did, you know, Harvey Weinstein, who would... you know, whip it out. And I mean, that was inappropriate. He said, were different in the 60s and 70s. You know, Harvey, that was never appropriate. Thank you. So it depends on the severity, but I get your point.
No, you're right. Like, there's a reason that there was the standard cartoon with the man chasing the secretary around the desk.
Yeah.
It was there for a reason, because that happened. You just had to learn to stay away from that person or never be alone with them.
Right.
And to put the onus, as you said before, on the woman to be in an unsafe situation and to make herself, quote, safe is just wrong. And coming from a patriarchal background, fundamentalist background, I was taught that it's the woman's fault when a man behaves like that.
That's terrible.
So there's a lot of women like me who thought, well, okay, maybe I'm just sending the wrong signal. What did I do wrong?
Right. I hear you, Kat. And I'm afraid now I'm going to cut you off just because I want to get to one last caller, Deborah. But thank you for your call. And please call it another time. We can have this discussion next week. I'm happy to continue it. Just real quick, because our time is running out. Deborah on line four from Roanoke. You got like 30 seconds. Make your point.
Hi, Mark.
Hi there. Sorry we're running out of time.
I just want to state that... as a victim of sexual abuse and rape from my father, that, you know, I get that there's consequences, because I was shunned from my family. I wasn't allowed to go to any more holiday celebrations, weddings, anniversaries, graduations, my own sister's graduation.
It's a terrible story. I tell you what, Deborah, I'm afraid our time has run out at the worst possible time.